detained by the weather, as have been two other members of the court. He will participate in the decision in this case. The court is ready to hear argument from the petitioners in 080043.
Please the court. Mr. Belair will present argument for the petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Gary Belair, and my appearance today is on behalf of Tempe Industries. This is a design defect case. The case raises the question that this court has addressed recently in other contexts, and that question is this: whether the persons who are in the best position to guard against personal injuries should bear all risk of a failure to use their own common sense. If the judgment stands, then you and I and society must bear that cost. But if the court reverses and renders, then individuals who fail to use their own common sense will bear those costs. Precedent of this court and logic dictate the latter result. Simply stated, Tempe owed no duty in this case because the usage of the grain hopper in question was unreasonable as a matter of law. To help the court understand why, I'd like to briefly discuss the facts. And to do that, I'd like to refer you to the handouts we had this morning, to page 3.
Well, first of all, let me ask you, why products liability contemplates some amount of foreseeable misuse? And why wouldn't this fit under a foreseeable misuse?
Your Honor, this is a case where the foreseeable misuse is a legal causation question. And because it's a legal causation question, we don't have to get into the balancing question that you ordinarily encounter in a products liability design defect case. This is a case where the usage is such that as a matter of law, there's no basis for this being anything other than an unreasonable usage.
What's a legal causation problem?
Legal causation, as I understand it, is a doctrine that I have traced back to a decision by Justice Owens, who talked at great length about there has to be a limit, and the court determines what the limit is as to whether a cause is, in fact, a legal cause.
Are you talking about proximate cause or duty here? I thought you were talking about duty.
Your Honor, the causation question, as that case talks about, drifts into the duty question at times. And this is such a case where you don't have to reach the true causation issue because the causation issue is present in the duty question, and that's where we can address it, is there is no duty because of the causation issue that the court has relied upon in the past to determine the presence or absence of a duty.
I was looking for some explanation of why the ladder is there. Is there some reason for that?
Yes, Your Honor, the ladder is there because, to help you understand, this trailer is kind of like a U-Haul trailer, with one exception. It's got no top. And it has no top on it because the purpose is to facilitate quick loading. As the trailer is going down the field next to the combine is able to dump grain into the top. The ladder and the platform that's there, that's visible on page 3 of my handout, facilitates drivers' inspection of how the load is being dispersed in the trailer itself and how full they are, and that enables them to determine when it's time to quit you know, loading the vehicle up. And so that is there for the purpose of inspecting what's going into the trailer itself. And it's not there for the purpose that it was used in this case, and that was to provide access to a quote-unquote catwalk.
Well, how would somebody know that? I mean, you got a trailer with a ladder on it, and
Yeah, it just looks like it's climb up a board and check out what's inside here. I mean, how would you know that? Do you have some?
Your Honor, there are warnings provided on it, and those warnings address the idea that people are always supposed to use a three-point stance whenever they're using any component of the access system.
What's a three-point stance? That reminds me of a lineman getting up ready to knock somebody out in a football game. What is that?
A three-point stance in this context and out of the football context is that you always have two hands and a foot or 2 feet and a hand affixed to the trailer in some way when you're dealing with the trailer. And when you're climbing on the ladder, that's how you're supposed to use the ladder. When you're standing on the platform that's there to inspect what's in the trailer, you have 2 feet on the platform and you have handholds that you're able to use. So you're always able to maintain a three-point stance when you're using
That warning appear?
That warning.
But it's not in your photographs, sir.
No, it's not in the photograph. No, Your Honor, that's correct. Although I do think that the warning is visible, but I can't read it. But it's invisible. It's visible, I should say. In between the bottom and the first rung of the ladder, you can see that there's warnings affixed there, and that's one of the warnings that's there.
And what does the warning say?
That warning, one of the things it says is to always maintain a three-point contact when you're on the access system.
And these are people in the field that are loading up grain, and what surely this doesn't require any special training.
These are people who are experienced truck drivers, and Mr. Gish himself was an experienced truck driver. He knew how to operate this particular type of trailer. It was not his first time to operate this type of trailer. He had lots of experience at it.
So how would someone warn for a windburst or wind that knocked, and I guess in this case, knocked him off the ladder?
Your Honor, that's another example of common sense. And for those of us who are from West Texas, we know that to get out when the winds are high, that there are things we have to do common sense-wise to assure our own personal safety. When you have a microburst, you're entirely correct that it's difficult to warn. Indeed, when they had the aircraft crash in Dallas a number of years ago, that was one of the problems, is that they weren't able to predict that a wind would be capable of knocking an aircraft out of the sky. But this was a day when the winds were already high. Mr. Gish knew it when he got up on top of this trailer. And that's the point I'd like to make to you at this time. If you look at page 2, this top rail that's kind of bisecting the page in half is only 5.66 inches at its widest. The picture itself is the exact dimension. And when I put my size D on top of it, there isn't very much space that isn't covered up. And so you're, in effect, trying to conduct a field sobriety test. You might be sober at the time, but you're on a surface that is an extruded aluminum, and it is slippery. And Mr. Gish knew that when he got up there.
Slanted or flat?
It is slightly slanted and by design. And the reason is that they want to prevent cross-contamination of the products that are loaded into this thing. And they do that by having a slight slant so that in the event wheat or whatever that happens to land on that rail, it'll vibrate back into to the trailer and then be able to be discharged out the bottom as opposed to staying and contaminating another load. That would be important in a case like this because we weren't talking about hauling a grain product. We were actually talking about hauling a bulk fertilizer that we don't want contaminating grain in the future.
What else is it used for? Grain, fertilizer?
It is a trailer that's kind of a jack of all trades in the agriculture community. It is used for grain. Indeed, when they're harvesting the wheat, they're able to just have the combine drive next to the trailer and just blow the harvested product right into the top. And then it's able to be discharged quickly right out the bottom. And that's why when you talk about starting to narrow the opening that you're trying to put product into, you're actually altering the feasibility of its usage. You're making it more difficult to load.
He said he had to get up there to check the load. In Parker versus Highland Park, a case where open an obvious defect, the stairs weren't lit, but there was no other way down, so you had no choice. You had to go that way. What other choices did he have?
Mr. Gish had plenty of choices.
List them for me.
One of the choices was that instead of using the trailer as a catwalk, which it was never intended to be used as, he could have gone to the Martin plant where he was trying to load the product and say, your equipment is not working right now. I need you to fix your equipment so that the chute can be lowered so that I can fill my load of fertilizer. Mm-hmm. That's one choice.
Now, that's separate. That's a separate apparatus from this tank,
yes,
right?
Your Honor. The apparatus that was causing the problem at the time was not the trailer at all. It was equipment at the plant where he was trying to load the bulk fertilizer. The second choice, I guess, would have been that he could have just not gotten the load from them and refused to go back to them because he had alerted them to this problem time and time again, according to his testimony. And so under those sort of circumstances, it might behoove him to go somewhere else to buy the fertilizer as opposed to going to somewhere where he knows he's going to run into a problem.
Did he sue the seller?
Yes, Your Honor, he did. And we were severed out, and that case proceeded on to a judgment that was a split decision, if you will.
Okay. Is that part judgment part of the record? Or?
No, Your Honor. No. That judgment is not in the record. There are.
It's all right. I asked. You're not in
why isn't the warning adequate here?
I'm sorry.
I guess you would argue the warning should be adequate. Why is that?
That warning is there, I think, more to alert someone of a potential concealed danger, and that's this. That if you're up there and climbing over the top, and there is a warning that addresses that, don't climb over the top and into the compartment. There's a risk that you're going to be buried in the fertilizer or whatever it is that's being loaded, buried and suffocated. And that's not an open and obvious risk, and so that's something that the manufacturer wanted them to think about as far as climbing over the top. And so that warning is there to provide for safety. The warning about the three-point contact is there to provide for safety. But
I guess if that were to happen, someone were to fall in into this grain or fertilizer and they suffocated, then I guess it would be an argument that it was a design defect because there wasn't a guard to prevent that from happening or some type of railing to prevent someone from falling in.
Your Honor, that's the problem. If you start designing those type of guards, you're defeating the purpose of the trailer, and that's to get product in with as little resistance as possible. And so when you start putting guards up, when you start putting rails up by the side of the thing, you're actually making it more difficult to load the product. Indeed, a combine has a fixed arm that you can't change the height of. And so when you start trying to add protection for something that was never intended to be a catwalk, you're defeating the utility of the product itself. And for that reason, the product, you know, ought never to have been used. Common sense tells us that you don't go 12 foot up in the air and try and use this to effect repairs to somebody else's broken equipment. This is a case where, as I say, that is as open and obvious to anyone as the Parker case. But there was an alternative in this case. The driver had choices to make. He made bad choices, just as Mr. Moritz made bad choices on where to secure his load. He could have pulled down that ramp and been at ground level, and he would not have sustained the injuries that he sustained. There are things that Mr. Gish could have done to assure that he didn't have to effect repairs to somebody else's equipment by trying to use this trailer as a catwalk that it was never designed to be used for. This is a case that if the court will look at the record, the circumstances before the court are such that if this case does not warrant a summary judgment, then a product manufacturer will never be able to establish its right to a summary judgment in a defective design case. For that reason, as well as all the reasons stated in our brief, we ask the court to reverse and render.
Quick question. Looking on page 2 at your picture, the bisecting railing, it's slanted, not level. Is it coated with kind of a slick surface to facilitate stuff kind of coasting off of it, or is it?
Your Honor, that surface is an extremely slick surface. It is extruded aluminum, which, as the court may recall from one of its recent arguments, that's kind of like the old Play-Doh set where you force the Play-Doh through and you got a product out at the other end. This process of manufacturing the aluminum that way makes a slick surface, and it gets even slicker when the grain actually gets up there and starts wearing on it. So it is indeed a very slick surface, and that's by design to ensure that there is no cross-contamination.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court's ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Wood will present argument for the respondent.
Thank you, Your Honors. As mentioned, my name is James Wood, and I represent the respondent in this particular case, Robert Gish. Let me begin, if I could, by addressing some of the issues that were raised by my learned colleague. First, I think there's been a great jump ahead in the assumption that my colleague has made, and that is that this was, in fact, foreseeable misuse. I think we've taken a giant leap forward by somehow immediately making this assumption that somehow that what Mr. Gish did was misuse or was, in fact, any type of something that he did improper.
Well, let's say it is foreseeable misuse.
All right.
Then you have to warn. And why is the three-point warning not sufficient?
Well, the three-point warning, first off, Your Honors, I would submit in the Court of Appeals actually addressed this and actually quotes the record. I know some of you, I believe it was Justice Medina, asked about what the warning says. And the warning is we respectfully submit, wholly inadequate. It says, the warning in question says nothing about walking or using the hopper's edge. The warning only tells the user, very small warning, only tells the user, do not climb up on the edge and into the back of the trailer.
You know what? I'm going to use this exhibit or this handout was given here, page 2. You know what the distance is from this rail to this rail? Do you know how far along this is?
No, sir, but I can speculate. It's probably 10 feet.
So you got, and then I guess the ladder would be here.
Yes, sir. And that is shown in the picture right before, sir, or the picture right after.
Okay. So you'd have the ladder, and if someone were to get up on this rail, looks like you'd have to negotiate this first crossbar. And I don't know how you would do that. Maybe you'd walk over it, put your hand here. That just seems to be dangerous by looking at it. I'm not going to get up there because I might slide in or fall off.
Well, Your Honors, and I think that your point is for you saying that may be dangerous, I think also raises two issues. One, Texas is a comparative fault state. And so whether Mr. Gish was in fact negligent in this case or whether Mr. Gish acted unreasonably in this case would certainly be a jury question that the jury could decide as to his negligence. And that's a question that the defense can raise and certainly make at the trial of this case. But in West Texas, and I think Justice Johnson certainly has this experience as well, it is not unusual to have drivers climbing up on top of these grain trucks.
Yeah, well, I realize when you're in the field doing work and you're pressed for time, you probably take more risks than you normally would if you're sitting here looking at a picture.
And Your Honors, I also think in these handouts, I think it's very, very important for the court to look at what our experts have said, too. If you look here, the evidence has been developed, and it is in the record with the court. The Tempty manufacturer testified that these two top rungs are not necessary. In other words, he testified that the rungs are for feet, and these rails here are for hands. So there would be no reason to have these two top rungs in place for someone to look into the back of the trailer.
What's the purpose for the side rail here?
Sir?
What's the purpose for the side rail on the side of the...
That would be where you could stand over and look into the trailer, Justice, and that's my point exactly. This little platform here is where the person would stand if they're wanting to look into the back of the trailer to see how the grain, or in this case, fertilizer was being loaded. So what you would do is climb up and move over here if you wanted to look into that. But why would you need rungs, which again, according to Tempty's manufacturer, are for feet, if in fact you're not wanting or making it permissible for the person to climb up on top?
Well, two reasons. Number one, because your hand might slip off the side and you want to grab something in the middle, and you go to grab and there's nothing there. So then if you'd had something in the middle there to grab, I could have grabbed it. Number two, because every ladder ever created in human history has rungs all the way to the top, even though they say don't use the top two.
Don't stand.
And that's so your position is that they're just all defective, because you can't build a ladder that says don't stand on the top and have a top on it, because if you have a top, people are supposed to ignore the warning says don't stand on the top.
Well, I would respectfully say in this case, Your Honor, it's different because this ladder is bolted to the trailer. This isn't a ladder that's on a three-point tripod type system. I mean, this is a ladder with the handholds are absolutely bolted in to that. So
I understand it's not exactly like all ladders, but the argument's exactly the same. Because every ladder says don't use the top two, and you're saying if the top two are there, then a warning saying don't use them is no good. It's just defective and they shouldn't be there at all.
Well, I don't know if a warning that says there...
Why do we have warnings?
Well, Your Honor...
What's the point? The point...
There is no warning in this case. I mean, that's the issue. Maybe a warning that says don't use the top two rungs of the ladder might have been sufficient in this case.
How about...
And that warning might have been heeded, but there is no warning.
How about a warning that said warning, no warnings ahead? Just referring to a brilliantly written dissent last week by Justice Heck.
Do you agree with opposing counsel that he did have some choices, some alternatives?
Absolutely not. And, Your Honor, that's absolutely not developed in this record at all.
Tell me why he had to do this. He had to walk on top.
Well, Your Honor, the actual evidence in the case is that he had complained previously and that he had been told by the owner of the facility that this was his problem. This was his trailer. He needed to get the trailer loaded.
That sounds so, just like Moritz, doesn't it?
Sir?
Doesn't that sound just like the Moritz case?
Well, it goes on at that point. I mean, he not only can't use the trailer to do it, but there is nothing else that he can do if he's going to actually, in fact, load the trailer. And I think it misinterprets the real world. I mean,
we were discussing a little while ago about the people get out there and they do things that they're in a hurry. Well, obviously, Mr. Moritz loaded his truck on this ramp without guardrails. Because he was in a hurry. He didn't have to do that. He could have driven down on level ground and finished loading his truck, but he was in a hurry and did it. And this court, and of course it was, I wasn't.
Not unanimous.
It wasn't unanimous. But the court held that he was, as a matter of law, that he was, because of the open and obvious condition, that he loses. Now, why wouldn't the same thing apply here?
Okay. Well, Your Honor, first, we don't think that it is an open and obvious condition. If you look at the record in this case, the
you don't think it's obvious, an obvious danger to go standing on top of an unguarded trailer like this?
No, not under these. I mean, it's a routine practice that happens in this particular area.
Well, but does that mean it's not dangerous to that somebody doesn't recognize the danger of falling off the side of the top of the trailer because everybody does it?
No, but I think it goes to whether or not what his appreciation would be. In other words, the record is he had climbed on top of this trailer before, and he had not ever had a problem with stability on it before. So, I mean, I think it goes back to what his state of mind was at that particular time.
Well, had he been on the trailer before under these conditions when there were micro wind bursts? And I mean, don't you have to consider all of that when you talk about his experience?
Yes, sir, Your Honor. And I think the evidence is that this was, and the record specifically talks about a microburst. There is no evidence to suggest that the wind was blowing as he climbed up on top of the trailer. And I think it's fairly common that we'll see gusts of wind in that part of the state where it's, you know, you may have a relatively mild wind, and then all of a sudden you can have a burst or a blow of wind at that particular time.
So what is the evidence, excuse me, Justice Johnson, what is the evidence to support your position that this case doesn't get defeated by motion for summary judgment? What's your scintilla of evidence?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, I think that I appreciate that question because that goes all the way back to the beginning of what I think we're talking about. In a products liability case, as I understand it, we have to show three things. One, we have to show there's a safer alternative design. Two, we have to show that design would have prevented the accident or significantly reduced the risk of injury without substantially impairing the product's utility. And then we have to show that it was technologically and economically feasible at the time it left the manufacturer. We believe we've done that. We have an expert who's from Texas A&M University. He's a PhD from A&M in engineering. He also is a board-certified safety professional. And he has testified that there were two significant safer alternative designs that would not have affected the utility of the trailer. First, we've talked, and I won't spend much time, just simply removing the top two rungs on this. We've talked about that. But secondly, and I think this is very important, and we do see this on trailers. This is a common event on many different types of trailers, is simply to have guardrails. And the way the guardrails work, they don't impair the utility of the trailer at all. They are on the side of the trailer. You simply lift those up, and then the worker is able to maintain three-point contact.
But then doesn't that encourage people then to come up on top of the trailer? If you're going to put guardrails up, doesn't it say, come on up?
I think the evidence is that oftentimes, and I think Tempty knows this, is workers have to be up on the sides. You know, that is what our point is in this case. It is something, there are times where the worker has to get up on the side of the trailer. This case, it was to use the downspout. In other cases, it may be to knock loose, wet product. I mean, it's not an uncommon practice. I'm not going to necessarily tell Your Honors that it's common, but it's not an uncommon practice.
And is there a trailer similar to the one that the A&M engineer expert testified about? Are there trailers like that used in the field?
Yes, sir. I'm not saying they're necessarily, I don't know that he talks about grain trailers in his reports, but there are absolutely trailers that are used, and I can't remember if it's in this record or in the other record, but there's actually photographs and pictures of trailers where you use the guardrail system.
And what's the industry standard to do this type of work? Are there more trailers like the one we have here, or are there more trailers like the one that the A&M engineer
Think it's up to the customer preference, Your Honor. What Tempty's representative actually testified to, and I think this goes to utility as well, the Tempty representative actually testified that the company routinely changed the trailer's design, quote, every day based on customer requests. So I think a fair reading of that would be certainly that if the customer requested that these types of guardrails be applied, these foldable guardrails be applied, which is what our expert talks about, then I think that would have been done.
Your position is it's a necessity.
Sir?
Your position is it's a necessity to get on top of the trailer.
Well, my position is that in certain circumstances it may be necessary. I don't know that in every single circumstance it is an absolute necessity.
But I mean, for design defect, I mean, your argument is they should have foreseen that people were going to have to do this. And they say they didn't. They thought people would be foolish to do it. So why is it? Give me a little of the background of grain loading, why it's a necessity sometimes to climb up on the edge.
Okay. First off, Your Honor, I would submit that's going to be a fact question in the case. And so whether that's been proved as a matter of law, I don't think that's has been proved as a matter of law. But one of the necessities would be in this very type of situation. What happens is this was a fertilizer plant, and the fertilizer comes out of a spout. There's a downspout, and exactly the way this spout works in this case is there's a rope that is tied or attached to the building. You know, it's actually got a latch, and you wrap the rope around it. And so the way the downspout is typically lowered is you would unhook the rope around the latch, and then the downspout should lower sufficiently low enough into the back of the trailer that the product is not going to blow out when it's actually loaded in. It's going to stay in the product. Well, in this particular case, the downspout was corroded. I mean, as it gets old and used, basically you mix water with fertilizer from time to time, and you get a downspout that gets crusty, and it won't lower. And so that's exactly what you had happen in this case.
So he was climbing up to pull on it?
Exactly.
Pull it down?
Yes, sir. In other words, what he did in the case, and the record develops, is he came to the plant, he backed the trailer under, he went over. It wasn't like he just said, boy, I'm going to run up here and climb up on top of this trailer. He went over to the latch, he tried to lower the trailer tried to lower the downspout. The downspout didn't lower.
That sounds to me like a great case for design defect in the downspout. That's where the problem was. If the downspout had worked fine, he wouldn't have had to been up on the rails.
That's true. And
I'm concerned about Justice O'Neill's question, an example I used last month, that everybody, I'm told, that's fallen over the edge in Grand Canyon has fallen over at a place where there are rails. Because when there are no rails, people don't get anywhere close to the edge of the Grand Canyon. But when there are rails, people want to go and look, you know, stick their head, because that's the way we all are. And isn't it true, if you make it so there's non-skid up there, the fact is you're going to have a lot more people walking up there and probably a lot more people injured?
Well, I mean, I just think that's going to be a fact question that's going to have to be developed. I mean, that's not what we have in the record in this case, that more people would be injured if, in fact, they did that.
We won't know until we mandate it. But, I mean, that's you know, what we would, in effect, do if your suit's successful. And then it becomes mandatory, and everybody has to do it. And, you know, 20 years from now, we'll have the facts in, but...
Well, Your Honor, I would respectfully submit that's really not the case in this particular situation. I think the standard that we're dealing with is summary judgment. And as I understand the standard for summary judgment, it is whether reasonable minds can differ as to whether or not this was a design defect. And I think the evidence is pretty strong that they can. I mean, the Amarillo Court of Appeals presumably is made up of justices who are reasonable. And they have looked at the very same facts here, and they have concluded that reasonable minds can differ as to whether or not there was a design defect.
Of course, we have that fight all the time. Let me ask you to address the issue of preservation. Say they waived their summary judgment didn't raise this issue?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that is the issue that was actually raised is design defect. And there is nothing in there. If you look at their actual motion for summary judgment, the one that was actually filed in the district court itself, the actual language used is whether or not there was a design defect. And whether or not whether Gish has presented evidence of a design defect, which is a producing cause of his personal injury. So we're talking about the design itself. So the focus of what we did, and certainly in response to in the summary judgment, was to develop that this was a design defect, and we set forth the three elements of that.
Right. But I'm just wondering how I don't think we've had that many cases on the no evidence motions, and you do have to specify what elements there's no evidence of. But in a case like this, where you know what they're talking about, and it's clear from your response, which was, I recall, several hundred pages long.
No, sir.
It's pretty long.
It was just this
with exhibits and
okay, maybe so. Okay.
Depositions and
the response to the summary judgment.
Right.
Yes, sir. I thought you meant the response.
Right.
So yes.
It certainly doesn't look like a case where you didn't know what the summary judgment was about. What do we do with the rule when the rule says you need to specify the element? If you don't specify the element, but it's clear from the response you knew what the element, what the fight was about. I mean, this is not that complicated a case. It's the ladder and the skids, our non-skid surface. Do we disregard the rule? Do we?
No, sir, Your Honor. I don't think that there was knowledge on the part of on our side of that. I mean, basically, the way I'm looking at this issue, their argument now becomes Gish's conduct. If you think about it, I respectfully submit that the petitioner has now shifted their argument in the Court of Appeals and in the Supreme Court to focus now on Gish's conduct. Did Gish do something that was unreasonable? Was this foreseeable misuse? That was not raised in the trial court at all. And so the trial court didn't have that. What was raised in the trial court was whether or not there was a design defect, the three elements that I listed before. And we think that those elements, we overcame that certainly in the summary judgment. But now the focus has now shifted completely over to Gish's conduct. That this was foreseeable misuse and that Gish was the one responsible. But, Your Honor, I also want to make this point because I think it's so critical in this particular case is that we do have comparative fault. And unless we're going to just simply say, it seems like all of the arguments and points that are being raised today are almost jury arguments. They're almost evidence that's going to have to be presented to the jury.
Could you go over for me one more time how you would distinguish this from Moritz?
Well, Your Honor, I think the difference is my understanding. One is Moritz was a, unless I'm misreading the case, was a employment case. If I'm not mistaken on that, I think I may be. But the main distinguishing point that I would make is, if my understanding is correct, is that again we go to comparative fault. I know in Skiles
that view did not prevail.
Then, I mean, I still think it's a different view because we're talking about products liability. I mean, in a products liability case, it's set up by statute. The legislature has abolished.
No, Moritz was, you don't have to warn a guy that there's no handrails when he's used it for a year and a half and knows there's no handrails. And that looks kind of like this. You don't have to warn a guy that the sides are not non-skid service when it's his truck and he knows they're non-skid service.
Well, the warnings, though, are not. This is purely a design defect theory that we're up here on. There's not a warning theory that's been in front of the court.
Let me ask before your time has run out, with the senior justice's permission, go over a little bit here.
Yes, sir.
You say the safer alternative design testimony from your expert was to add handrails on top of the truck and take the two top rungs off the ladder.
Either or, yes, sir.
Either or. Well, you've said it's necessary on occasion for the driver to get up on top of the truck. If you take two top rungs off the ladder, doesn't that make it dangerous to get on top of the truck if it's necessary at some time for the driver to get up there?
Well, I think that
would create a different problem, a different case where we have an unreasonably dangerous access method alleged?
It could. I mean, and I think that argument, you could say, cuts both ways, as it establishes knowledge as to Tempty, and it might also establish knowledge as to Mr. Gish. But I respectfully submit, Your Honor, that if that were the case, then what it would do is, for example, in this particular case, is to force Martin Resources at that point to have to provide some type of access system. In other words, if the driver can't...
Well, that cuts against your expert's recommendation to take the two top rungs off the ladder, then.
No, sir. If I said that, I misspoke. What I'm saying is, the way you would prevent somebody or make it more difficult for somebody to get on top is to remove the top two rungs. So if you're not inviting them on top of the trailer, then you would remove the top two rungs. On the other hand...
But you also said it is necessary on occasion for the driver to get up there. But your expert, one of his recommendations was to take the method of access to the top off. Take that away, the two top rungs of the ladder. Which means if it's necessary for the driver to get up there, he's going to have to get up there in some manner that's not going to be as convenient as climbing the ladder because the two top rungs are going to be removed, according to your expert.
Yes, sir, and that I think what that would benefit is this. If there is no access really to the top of the trailer, then at that point it is going to make it much more likely that the seller of the product is going to have to do something to allow the driver to have access. And you would do that by a catwalk system. Because it is going to be necessary from time to time for drivers, I submit, and I think we see that, to be on top of the trailer. But if there's access, then the driver can, for example, Martin can expect the driver, Martin Resources can expect the driver to get up there and fix the problem. On the other hand, if there is no access to it, then the alternative is going to be for Martin or someone like Martin to have a catwalk or a platform type system that would allow the driver to do the same thing.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Interestingly enough, Gish's own expert testified that he saw no reasonable need to be on top of this trailer. And that's why he's advocating that you take off those two runs. And indeed, it was his advocation that says the runs weren't necessary. It wasn't Mr. Thompson, who was the representative from Tempe. Talking about guardrails, look at the affidavit put in as summary judgment evidence. It doesn't talk about guardrails. It talks about the manufacturer could get creative. He could fashion some sort of handholds based on his creativity. There's not been an offer of a reasonable alternative. The expert did point to two other types of trailers. They don't have the same utility. One of them was a tanker truck, which, as the court may be aware, has a very small round opening where drivers actually have to climb up on top and get their head right by the opening to see what's going on in the tanker truck. We don't have a small opening. We have a large opening to facilitate quick loading. That's why tanker trucks have catwalks, and that's why this truck doesn't need a catwalk.
And did you, your motion for summary judgment could have been a little more specific, the no evidence part.
Your Honor, I was not the author, and so I'll take no pride of ownership in that particular motion. I will, however, say that the motion was sufficient enough to convey its intent, and there were special exceptions, and those special exceptions were disposed of in the court's order, and they were not attacked on appeal with respect to the design defect claim.
And disposed of, you mean denied?
Correct.
And the trial judge denied it because?
He knew that they knew what everybody was talking about. We were all on the same page at the trial court level.
But that what's in the motion would not be enough if the argument was the whole truck was defective, and we don't have any idea what part. I mean, you couldn't just file a no evidence summary judgment saying there's no evidence of design.
I wouldn't be here today if that's the status of the case. I'd like to point the court's attention to the last attachment to my handout this morning. And in that case, you'll see that we're talking about products restatement third, section 2. And that case, or that section, is actually addressing some of the issues that are here today. And indeed, example number 20, if memory serves me right, talks about a chair that has side rails where a college student was trying to access a top shelf of a bookshelf to get a book. And he climbed up those side rails and fell, injuring himself. That's exactly what we're talking about in this case. The student has put himself at risk. Mr. Gish has put himself at risk. The authors of the restatement tell us that the misuse, such as reaching for the top shelf from the top run of a chair, is so unreasonable that it entails a risk that need not be designed against.
That's a little different, though. I mean, you have a chair that's not attached to a wall or a bookshelf, and someone brings a chair and tries to stand on it. Here you have a ladder that's attached to the trailer. It's part of the entire assembly.
Your Honor, I did make myself clear. What I'm trying to talk about at this point in time is the 5.66 inch catwalk. It's a lot closer to being a tightrope than it is a catwalk.
You're talking about the one on the front of the picture here, the 5.66 catwalk?
No, Your Honor, that's a platform that they actually have. I believe the dimension on that is 12 inches. And that's an actual platform where they can stand. Referring to the catwalk, I'm referring to exhibit on page 2, where it's the top rail of the side wall of this U-Haul that has no top. That's what's only 5.66 inches. That's where Mr. Gish was standing when he fell, trying to access somebody else's broken equipment. And to add to your Grand Canyon with a personal experience, in my prior life I was an electrical contractor. A general contractor brought me up on top of a 5-story building, and he did it before the guardrails were in place. And he asked me, "See how close you get to the end." And I was about 4.5 feet from the edge. When they put the guardrails up the next week, I was right there looking over the side of the building. For all the reasons stated, we ask the court to reverse and render judgment against Mr. Gish. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the arguments in the first case. The court will take a brief recess.
Rise.